Welcome to Doc Talks, a production of Doctors of BC. In this podcast, we have conversations and explore issues about topics that matter to physicians in British Columbia. My name is Christine Tam from Doctors of BC, and I'll be hosting this episode of Doc Talks today. I would like to start by acknowledging and thanking the Coast Salish people whose traditional, unceded, and ancestral territory my home and home office resides on. I express my gratitude to the Squamish Nation and Tsleil-Waututh Nation, and I value the opportunity to live and work here on this traditional territory. In today's episode, psychiatrist Dr. Jennifer Russell and family physician Dr. Lawrence Yang join us to talk about physician burnout and COVID-19. Physician burnout is such a big and important topic, even when we're not dealing with a global healthcare crisis, and it can have detrimental effects on mental, physical, and emotional health. The pandemic has only increased the stress and pressures felt by physicians, which adds a new level of concern. In our conversation today, we'll explore the complex causes of burnout, from workload to long-term stress to systemic-wide burdens in healthcare, and look at ways to recognize, address, and heal from its effects, particularly during COVID-19. Dr. Russell and Dr. Yang, thank you so much for joining us today. I'd like to start with you, Lawrence. You have shared your personal experience with burnout publicly and have been involved with several projects to bring awareness to the issue. Tell us about yourself and your experience.
Sure. I'm a family doctor in Surrey and have been so for about 10 years now. And yeah, my burnout experience, I didn't know it was called burnout until maybe about 6 years ago. Prior to that, I was just exhausted and physically unwell. And a lot of it, I think, began because I was, like many family physicians, in an area of great clinical need where the demands on me from the patients, the needs of the patients far outcompeted my own supply of skills and actually the community's supply of effective resource pathways or referral pathways to treat particular diseases and challenges, and namely psychiatric and psychological challenges. So a lot of that weighed on me. And like many physicians, as an empathic person, we really want to do our best to help the patients. And it was just so distressing to not be able to help people. And I didn't really have full understanding of where the boundaries of my responsibilities ended. And I would stretch myself and kind of neglected myself in order to try to take care of all the needs of my patients. And the system didn't seem to have all the supports that would have benefited me and my patients together. So I felt like I was fighting against the system on my own a lot of the times. There was a sense of isolation, and it was painful. It was a painful time.
Thank you for sharing. Now, this personal experience you had inspired work with the Specialist Services Committee, one of our joint collaborative committees. Tell us about that.
I was so challenged by my perception of what was kind of low quality outcomes in my patients, especially those who went to the hospital, because our hospitals are under-resourced, just like family physician clinics are under-resourced. And patients would often tell me, I went to the hospital to get help, and what I got instead was judgment or disrespect or stigma. And that was so painful for me, because I'm an idealistic practitioner, like many of my colleagues, wanting the best for the patient, wanting high quality care, and feeling that we were never actually able to reach that standard that I had inside of myself. So that distress, I decided I'm not going to take this anymore, and I'm going to go directly to the CEO of my health authority. And I said, my patients can't seem to get the outcomes they need. I'm really doing my best. And then my CEO directed me to Linda Dempster, who was VP of, I think it was patient experience at the time. Sorry, Linda, if that's wrong, but she said, there's a program. It's called Physician Quality Improvement. I'd like you to try it out. And I was like, what's that? And I went and I learned about the science of improvement, and it really empowered me. I really felt like, okay, if I can get other people to understand that we can actually improve the little frustrating things in our day, in our clinical spaces, in how service delivery is done, all of our frustrations might be a little bit better, and maybe we can get some better care quality, some better quality outcomes. And that was a big turning point in my burnout trajectory.
Thank you so much for sharing. I know it takes a lot to share that vulnerable journey, and we really appreciate it. Jen, in addition to being a psychiatrist, you're involved in our physician health program, the BC Children's Hospital Compass program, and you've also led peer-to-peer sessions for doctors during the pandemic. Could you tell us a bit about your work in the area of burnout?
Well, thanks, Christine. And so much of what Lawrence shared, I think, is relevant to really every physician in BC. What I've noticed is that, you know, really burnout and what is sometimes called compassion fatigue or more recently empathic strain happens to the people who care the most. So ironically, like the physicians, but it's not just physicians, nurses, teachers, anyone in a caregiving position who cares and cares the most is vulnerable to falling down like the path of burnout. And early on in the pandemic, a couple of my colleagues suggested, oh, wouldn't it be great if we had a peer support group here in BC? And for the first time, we were allowed to really use Zoom in a way that we weren't before because of like privacy. And I called Roxanne, who runs the physician health program. And within 2 weeks, we had the group up and going. And initially we were meeting twice a week. And then really realized the importance of having a peer support group here in BC and not wanting it to be just COVID. It did start off with COVID, but wanted to have something like more permanent that's going to be here, even hopefully once this pandemic is over. And now we meet every 2 weeks and online, and it's virtual. People can come in face to face. You can also just drop in anonymously and listen in. And I have to say, it's been one of the most rewarding experiences for me personally and professionally, because it's peer support. So I'm a member of the group too. This isn't a therapy group. It's not treatment. I like to think of it like the doctor's lounge that no longer exists, at least where I work. That space has been taken up years ago. And it's a chance for us to talk. And I've particularly valued meeting with physicians with more experience than me. So there's often physicians that are at the later stage in their career and hearing about how they've managed things, and also new grads and what they're going through. But overall, it's helped me feel less isolated, that I'm part of like a larger group, and just having a 1 hour every 2 weeks to have really a break in my schedule and share has been extremely restorative.
You had asked earlier, Christine, about how do you know the difference between anxiety and burnout? And for me, my burnout was very much about exhaustion, which, you know, triggered some like physical challenges in myself. But, you know, Jennifer, maybe as a psychiatrist, you can comment on that difference between anxiety and the clinical entity of burnout, if burnout is a clinical entity.
Well, this is, you know, it's a huge thing. I think when I hear and think about burnout, the emotional exhaustion is really probably like the cardinal symptom that you're talking about, Lawrence. And for me, what differentiates burnout from when we're getting into like more severe, you know, empathic strain, vicarious trauma, is in burnout, when you go away for 2 weeks on vacation, if any of us remember what that was, and you come back, you're actually refreshed and restored, right? So taking a break does make it better. So in some ways, it's a lot easier to deal with burnout. But once we get into a situation where we have, you know, lack of boundaries, isolation. And as you said, Lawrence, so eloquently, when the needs of everyone around us exceed what we're able to give, that's just a depleting situation. And that's where we start to get into more clinical issues, either, you know, anxiety or depression, or what I often see too is vicarious trauma, where actually our work has traumatized us. So it's really more than a bad day or burnout. We're actually, you know, having PTSD symptoms related to the work. And of course, like with any mind-body connection, you can have physical manifestations of this too. So I think all of it is related. And I tend to think of it as a continuum from, you know, stress to burnout to then actually getting into something more serious where you actually do need treatment and relooking at how to manage your life.
It resonates so much what you said, that it does feel like a trauma, and much of the trauma is from the demands of that system, not one person in particular, but not being able to meet those expectations that you've set on yourself or that the system sets on you.
So now going back to the link between stress and trauma and burnout, obviously the pandemic has caused a lot of this. Jen, in your peer-to-peer sessions or your day-to-day with colleagues, what sort of pandemic-related triggers are you observing?
Well, and I would throw myself in there too, because I want to be careful, like no one is immune to this. I think what's been really interesting with the pandemic is that while like Lawrence and I are treating patients during the pandemic, we're also going through the pandemic. So, you know, while I was, you know, getting calls about all sorts of, you know, clinical situations and managing them, my kids were upstairs getting, quote, homeschooled by, me, who's not a teacher. I really quickly became, I always loved teachers, but now they have like an even more special spot in my heart. So we're in this unique situation where we're helping people through a very traumatic situation while going through it ourselves. And so we have every physician has their own story, right? We have our own stressors, our own family situations, even our own risk factors for COVID. And we bring all of that every day, just like our patients. And so I think there's been a lot of themes. There's been that I've prepared my whole life for this, you know, the emergency doctors that like dove in and, you know, were there while we were managing the disaster planning. We've had people worry that they're going to get COVID, you know, that they're like 65, 70 years old. And like, what happens if I get sick? We have physicians that are single parents and like, who's looking after their kids while they're, you know, maybe the only doctor in their community that can intubate or can manage these situations. We've had doctors that have had really significant financial implications, like ORs got shut down. Like people just stopped making money, like on a dime. Other people, the work, you know, quadrupled. So I think the experience has been very, very varied, and the pandemic has evolved. Like I was one of those naive people that thought it was going to be a month long. Clearly I called that one wrong. And, you know, almost a year later, I think we're all in a different stage. Basically, I think we're all in the same storm, but we're on different boats. Some people are on like a dinghy, just getting by, and other people are on a luxury yacht. And I think it's the same for physicians. There's a wide range of experiences and supports. And really, we're just doing our best to get through it like everyone else.
I love that you started that peer support group online, Jennifer. I think that is absolutely the way that to go. We need more and more and more of that. And we need skills as peers to be able to support each other and to be able to identify who needs help a little bit better. But I think first off, so much of what put us into this situation, put me into the situation, was that I was raised in a culture where we have to just be resilient. We just gotta just tough it up. And if we're not tough enough, then we don't deserve to be here. We don't deserve to play this game. We don't deserve the privilege of being a physician. I was holding myself to such high expectations of functioning highly, billing consistently, perfect charts, EMR demands, meeting satisfaction scores of my patients while managing complexities up the wazoo. So it comes down to we need a different system. And a big part of that system is peer leadership, peer support. Another big part of that system is better team integration, less silos, as you mentioned earlier, to really integrating real actual care teams throughout the province. We can't have physicians who are isolated and not in contact with any support system.
So let's dig a little deeper into systemic burdens. So Doctors of BC has created a policy statement as part of our advocacy work regarding physician burdens. It started with a physician consultation where we heard from physicians about the burdens they're facing. Specifically, this work identified the systemic burdens that create additional pressure for doctors. So things like overwhelming paperwork, lack of resources, high patient loads, etc. What do you both see as the biggest systems-wide contributor to physicians feeling burnt out?
I personally feel like this starts even before you apply to medical school, because the expectations and what you need to get into medical school are almost so off the charts. Like I've read some applications and I'm like, these are literally perfect people. I'm like, did you ever fail a spelling test? Like so the pressure starts. And then when you get into medical school, I think we have a culture that is so it's it's so deep that we're not actually teaching how to take care of ourselves, right? It's all about cramming and doing more and getting into that residency program. And then when you get into the residency program, it's like, you know, being the best at the res, you know, doing the research, doing all those extra activities. And then you become a junior staff, and it's like the wheel just continues. And I think Lawrence is right. Like, we really need to look at ourselves in the mirror and go, what are we teaching really? Are we teaching the first year medical students to get enough sleep? Are we giving them a schedule where they have lunch, that they can go for walks, that they do normal things like attend family members' birthdays and weddings? Like, when you're a junior resident, does that mean you can't go to your sister's wedding? Because guess what? You're on call that weekend and you didn't write in 5 years in advance. Like, what is the culture? And it's so ingrained, and it really starts young. And when you've, you know, when you're in your early 20s and you've been, you're keen and you care and you really want to do well, our system just needs to really go, what are we doing? And so people like Prince and I need to look at ourselves and take care of ourselves first. And then once we're well enough, and that's going to take some of us longer than others, depending on the impact that we've all had, is how can we start to change the system one day at a time, whether it's like actually taking lunch so that other people can take lunch, or going for a walk, or doing your charting later so that you can, you know, get enough sleep. But I think this is really ingrained, and it really needs a system-wide overhaul.
I couldn't agree more. I think so much of our culture is defined by the leaders within our clinics, within our clinical spaces. Yeah. And I grew up and I was trained in a system where the leader showed self-sacrifice. Self-sacrifice is what equates to excellence. Yeah. And that's not a sustainable recipe. As you said, Jennifer, we have to look at what are we actually doing? And the CMA studies have shown that we have trainees who are suicidal at higher than average rates of the population. We actually have significant, probably up to 40% of burnout, of presenteeism. Like, people actually going to work as a physician and actually being there, their body's there, but are they actually making meaningful connections of building trust with patients? Are they working at the top of their scope, the top of their game? We're not looking at that. Our leadership, I think we are looking at it, we just don't know what to do about it. But when we see that we're not actually being effective at what we're trying to do, which is take care of patients, something has to change. And so often that change comes when leadership becomes aware and it starts looking at it. Maybe doing a survey once a year about how are people actually doing, and then adjusting and trying different things, empowering teams to deal with the frustrations at their local level, whether it's workflow issues or systems issues, and then making sure that they have those human connections, like the peer groups, the peer support teams that Jennifer's talking about. We need people and physician leaders in strategic, intentional positions to lead change to build up the wellness in every part of our system.
Those are really important points, and certainly areas that our longer policy paper will take a look at. Now, moving to resources, Jen, can you please explain a little bit about our physician health program?
So yeah, I have to say, I've been a member of their program for, I guess, a year and a half now, and it's been amazing. So the physician health program is a group run by Doctors of BC, which I really appreciate. So it's an independent, like, advocates for doctors group. And they have a whole team, a multidisciplinary team of, you know, clinical counselors that can take calls from physicians, and they have a 24-hour line that you can call 24 hours a day. So if you're on that call shift at 2 a.m., like, there is someone there that can get you help. They work together with a number of physicians that have expertise in occupational health issues and issues related to physicians. It's confidential. You can get help and then, you know, close your file and call back. They also provide support for spouses of physicians, which is a group that is often not, or partners that are often not talked about, and also advocate for what physicians need. I have to say, like, I think the people on the team really care, you know, like, the fact, like, the peer support thing is, I think, an idea, you know, it's brought up, and it's a, how do we do this attitude? Not a, oh my gosh, this is going to take, like, so much work, which it did administratively, especially when no one knew how to use Zoom, if you can remember that time. really, it's a dedicated group of people. And I think as a group of physicians in BC, we're really lucky to have doctors of BC, and we're really lucky to have the PHP program.
I'm surprised often when I speak to my colleagues, and they often don't even know that the PHP program exists.
Yeah.
And then there's a small percentage of those who actually don't know if they can trust the PHP program. Yeah. They're like, will somebody tell the college that I'm unfit to practice or something like that?
Yeah.
You know, but that's not a risk, right, Jennifer?
Well, this is where, like, you can't make a blanket statement. So if any of us are, you know, we're a self-regulating profession, right? So if someone is really unable to work, like, of course, we have to make sure that that person gets support. The reality is, you know, most people, especially for issues of like burnout, a little bit of support goes a long way. Like, you can feel dramatically better after having some advice from senior colleagues that can help you with things like boundaries, setting up healthy lifestyle practices, and a few sessions of counseling with the right person. So getting help for these things, often the call is the hardest part. Once you get going, it's actually not, sort of like your taxes, like calling the accountant is sometimes harder than getting them done. But there's a lot of barriers for physicians. Like, a lot of us don't have our own GP even, right? So people are like, who can I trust? But I think physician health is there. And if people have questions about their situation, they can ask and they will get an honest answer. But it is confidential. It is there to support you. And these things are treatable. I think that's the thing I find hardest as a psychiatrist, is I look at, you know, things like anxiety and depression, and they're very, very treatable. So we have great evidence-based treatments. There's really no reason for someone to be suffering, because the help is there. It's just, how do we get people connected to the help that is right for them?
How do we get physicians who are so about professionalism and being perfect to be okay with being vulnerable, to say, you know what, I think I need some help, and I'm actually open to receiving help from a peer or from a professional? How do we get physicians to do that? Because in our workplaces, sometimes we hear stigma towards people with illness, and naturally we're going to be like, I don't want them talking about me that way. So we hide it, we shove it down, and then we don't reveal it. And we think, oh, I'll just push through. But inevitably it will come out in the quality of our work, in the quality of our encounters, in the quality of our relationships. I think what you've done, Jennifer, with the peer support, that needs to be, we need to spread and scale that, as they say in the QI world. And we have leadership programs like the Sauder School of Business, the Beattie School of Business program. This is all doctors of BC. We have the General Practitioners Services Committee's Practice Support Program and coaching and mentoring development coming. So we have a lot of opportunities to get a lot more excellently skilled, compassionate peer support. And I'm really, really excited about that.
And Lawrence, what about personal strategies to dealing with burnout? What did you learn through your own experience?
Cognitive distortion is that I must do everything for my patient. So that doesn't make sense, because you can't, but we try to. So when I find myself like, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that, I've learned to have a trigger to shift myself to say, I need to build a team. Mm-hmm. I need to encourage and develop a team in order to do this. So I've shifted so much from I got to do this to, how do I hire and manage my human resources in my clinic better? How do I hire an MOA that is the right fit to assist me to develop a more sustainable way of delivering excellent care? Mm-hmm. So I've shifted from a singular hero perspective to team-based care perspective. Mm-hmm. And that goes through everything, through my work in the division, my work at the hospital as department head. Everything has shifted to really leveraging teams, and that requires leadership training. So I love the leadership programs that I've been able to experience from Doctors of BC. And that's really it. When I see myself like, I've got to work harder to do this, it's like, that doesn't make sense. That's a cognitive distortion. I can't do that. It's just not possible. That's one of the simple things. And social connection, really speaking about it. Like, as you said, I've spoken publicly about it, showing that it's okay to need help. And then all of a sudden, boom, people are messaging me like, I'm struggling too. And then forming communities of support. So that's really shifted. Having human connections where you can talk really real talk authentically about your sufferings and how it's okay and how we can get better together, that has been huge for me.
I think for me, the first thing is to acknowledge that everyone is vulnerable to burnout, because a lot of people graduate medical school or residency and think, oh, that happens to others. So when you acknowledge that you can be vulnerable to it, it's like a human thing that happens to the most caring people, then actually sitting down and I've actually done this for myself is go, what are the early warning signs in me that I'm on that path? And this is maybe overly simple, but I like to think of it like the green, the yellow, and the red zone. And obviously we want to be in the green all the time, but I'm not. I have my yellow days, but I want to try to stay out of the red where I'm really not doing well. And if you don't know what your yellow and red zone looks like, ask the people that you live with, because they can probably very quickly tell you. And some of the same things I think that Lawrence has, I've noticed in myself, like the feeling I need to take on more pressure, not getting enough sleep, not ending my day when I said I was going to, not exercising enough, being a bit irritable, or having, you know, I'm usually quite a happy person. And so when I start to get kind of down the cynical path, like that's a real warning sign for me that, okay, something's not right. And I've actually built a team, as like, just like Lawrence was talking about, to support me. Having people like the CMPA, you know, an accountant, help at home, because I have two kids and I, again, you can't do it all yourself. So have my husband and I have had to work out a plan, like how do we get through a week with two kids, even without a pandemic? And then how do I adjust? So it really, I have moved away from what can I do to who do I need to help me to get through what needs to be done. I have really tried to create a village around myself. So like in addition to the peer support, which I do, I also have a peer supervision group, which I meet with once a month, where we have a commitment to get together. And I also know that that group is available should they need to be in between. Like if I, like they will call me back, they will like when, and that's sort of like a informal, you know, thing. And so I've tried to create a community of support around myself. And I try to be that for others, really to keep myself well. So it's an everyday, every week journey that I just take step by step.
A trigger that I haven't felt in a long time, but what I was thinking as Jennifer was talking was when I'm actually not looking forward to going to work. And I actually thought, like within my first month of practice, I stopped looking forward to going to work. And I actually normalized that. I normalized that dread of, oh my gosh, I'm going to work now. And I just normalized that. Since in my recovery, I haven't felt that again because I've shifted my schedule around and booking patients more strategically, more realistically. So I haven't experienced that again. But I think any of our colleagues out there listening, if you're not looking forward to going to work, please reach out for help, and something has to change.
If doctors are feeling that sense of dread or some of those beginning feelings of burnout or feeling overwhelmed, we've talked about the Physician Health Program as a resource. What other resources do you both know of and can recommend?
Some of the other really great resources that I'm excited about are facilities engagement funds. Facility engagement funds can be used, and we are using them in Surrey, to form a wellness committee. And within that wellness committee, we are being funded through, and I think facility engagement funds allow anybody within a health authority facility to actually fund their own work. So then physicians can engage themselves, be funded at sessional rates per hour to actually build teams to learn more about wellness together and to maybe even develop peer support skills. I'm really excited about that. The other resources that UBC CPD, along with some of our leaders in professional coaching and family physicians, are developing a coaching and mentorship program. And that's going provincial and it's going to be virtually delivered. So I'm really excited about that. And of course, nothing, I think those leadership programs from SOTR, from Beatty School of Business, and of course the Physician Quality Improvement Program, which teaches you so much about personal capability, team-based functioning, the science of team-based functioning, and how to measure for improvement to reduce frustrations in your workplace. Those are fantastic resources that have really helped myself.
So in terms of resources that I found helpful, obviously the peer support, going on physicianhelp.com and talking to anyone at the Physician Health Program. If group isn't your thing, you can also talk to a clinician or one of the physicians at the program as well to get individual support. I think one of the things that's so hard with this answer is that there isn't a right answer for everybody. I wish there was a formula. I wish there was like a five-step, you do this and you're going to be okay. But it really depends. Different types of physicians need different things. Our jobs are so different. So you really have to find a custom, you know, solution that works for you. In addition to what Lawrence talked about, I think for me, I've been very fortunate enough to have mentors that are physicians that are older than me, have lived longer and have been willing to share their personal experiences and take the risk so that I didn't feel as alone and that what worked for them. So those mentorship relationships have been really valuable. Also, like Lawrence, I've been fortunate enough to take some of the leadership courses. I did the Sauter leadership course, as well as some of the ones through Jewel. And there was one on women in leadership, but there's been a number of leadership courses there that have given you a space to connect with other physicians that isn't necessarily clinical. So you're not like learning about the new medication or the last study. Really explore your life and how you set things up and hear from what other physicians are doing. And I have found those to be really restorative and really given me purpose. And then I think making sure you have a community of support. Like one of the biggest things to fight burnout is fighting the isolation. And ironically, when we start to go down like the empathic strain burnout, it's when we're least likely to reach out. People start to isolate. There's like a shame. Oh, I won't, you know, I'm not going to mention this. I won't call. Like, and it's subtle. Like it starts off kind of, you know, slow, but then before you know it, it's like you've actually kept a lot to yourself and you've, you know, retreated. So making sure you have that community. And then I guess the last thing, and this is going to sound very basic coming from a psychiatrist, but making sure you're getting enough exercise, making sure you're getting outside, making sure you're getting enough sleep. You know, I'm a big Apple Watch person for people who know me. And, you know, 2 weeks into the pandemic, I was at 650 steps at the end of the day. The commute to our basement is not far, you know, and it was very easy to be on Zoom all day long. And it's, you don't need to be a doctor to know that that's not healthy. And yet I was doing it. So really taking a look at the basics, sleep, eat, nutrition, social connection, you know, having fun. These are important for all of our lives, but especially right now in the pandemic. We've been reflecting as a group about how we can do things differently. And the pandemic has really called into question, I think, a lot of assumptions and patterns that we did before. And I'm really hopeful that we can have real, as Lawrence said, systemic change where we start to do things differently, because I do think it will not only improve our lives as healthcare providers, but also equally as importantly, our patients' experiences and their outcomes. Because if you don't have a healthy doctor, then they can't really take care of patients. We're so all interconnected because every doctor is a patient. It's just something I'm hoping that one of the gifts of COVID is going to be looking at this issue and making change so that we're not repeating the same things over and over again.
Jennifer and Lawrence, thank you so much for joining us today to have this important discussion. Doc Talks is a Doctors of BC podcast, and as always, we'll have resources on our website at doctorsofbc.ca and in the show notes. And a reminder, if you are a physician who is feeling stress and burnout, or if you know someone who might be, please call the Physician Health Program at 1-800-663-6729. The 24-hour helpline is there for you to offer private and discreet assistance with issues that you and your family may be facing.